the Centre for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Simon Smart.
And I'm Natasha Moore.
Well, I've always found turning points really fascinating, or perhaps not the turning point itself, but the moments, conversations, thoughts, all the little things that eventually culminate in a turning point. What is it that could bring a person to shift from one mindset to another, that could cause changing behaviour or lead to a complete life transformation? Well, Dr. Marvin Alasky is someone who's had his fair share of turning points in his life. He was born into a Jewish family, but decided to become an atheist in his early teens. And he described this turning point as bar mitzvah at 13 and atheist by 14.
But that was only the beginning. Dr. Alasky's atheism brought him down a path towards the Communist Party, which he joined in the 60s. But then, in his 20s, another shift occurs. He begins to realize that maybe his core beliefs are all wrong. Maybe there is a God out there, after all. But let's not jump ahead of ourselves. We have Dr. Alasky with us in the CPX studio to share his story, one that's full of unexpected twists and turns. Marvin, you grew up in a Jewish family. Your life, I imagine, would have been quite religious, but you decided at some point that you didn't believe in God.
Yes, sadly in the United States, it's very typical in Judaism, bar mitzvah at 13, atheist at 14, and I fit that pattern.
And then later on, you join the Communist Party. That was another nail in the coffin of religious belief, I suppose.
I suspect so. And that was, in a sense, a strange but somewhat natural follow-up to my atheism, because communism is based on atheism. And I went to college during the late 1960s, during the Vietnam protests, and was very much involved in that. So it was a slow but fairly natural movement in a way into Marxism, and then actually joining the Communist Party.
Now, at some point, you started warming to the idea that there might in fact be a God. Tell us about that. What happened there?
Well, it really wasn't so much a state of warming as going from utter cold, freezing, toward some warmth or even heat. There was one particular evening on November 1st, 1973, when I was 23 years old, that I just started to have a very strong sensation that actually my atheism was wrong. There is a God. And therefore my communism was wrong also. Now, had I been as thoughtful as I would like to think I sometimes am, then that would have immediately gotten me to reading the Bible, trying to figure out who is this God, trying to understand that. But I certainly did not want to believe in God. I was at the University of Michigan in graduate school at that time, and I knew that atheism was popular in academia, and any belief in God would be very harmful to my career. So I ran from that. But not through any real efforts of my own, but just through God's grace and kindness and putting things in front of me that I couldn't avoid, I, over the next 2.5 years, came to believe that actually Christianity is true and that I should thus profess it.
What do you think has been the biggest change in your life since you became a Christian?
Well, I can point to several things, and in many ways the biggest thing is biggest person is sitting here several feet away from me, my wife. My wife and I have now been married for 40 years, and not through any natural grace of my own, but purely through God's mercy, I've been faithful all that time, which is unnatural in some ways, but very good. So I'm very grateful for our marriage. I think really, as a communist, broke just about, really all of the Ten Commandments except murder. Physically, I had murderous thoughts, but lying, stealing, all these types of things, and since becoming a Christian, I am still a sinner, but I don't do those things.
Have you found then, in this trajectory, that this has been a kind of life-giving thing? Because a lot of people might think of it as the opposite of that.
I'm glad that I became a Christian at 26 rather than at age 66, because I have those years of experience and seeing God's faithfulness. But also, I think it's hard for me to see how atheists can face death without being really miserable about the situation, and I have the hope of life after death. So that's important. And then I've seen God's faithfulness. I've seen how God changes lots of lives, including lives among poor people, rich people, other people, and this is, I mean, number one, it's true, and number two, it's something that gives us a better life.
Perhaps a slightly impolite question for you.
Go right ahead.
This trajectory of kind of youthful radicalism and communism towards a more conservative than religious position as you get older, it's a bit of a cliche that people kind of drift more to the right as they get older. Do you feel your story fits that pattern, or might you object to that and say, no, it's different in these ways?
Well, I'd object to it in this sense, that there was this sudden and very surprising change. And then over the next 2.5 years, really changing and starting to try to think things using the Bible as God's word. And God is a lot smarter than me, certainly. And so if that's what the Bible says, then I want to live by it. Even there are some times I may not understand exactly why, but still go with the sense that God is smarter than me. So I like to think, and I think this is true, that actually the, you know, conservatism in any sort of political and cultural sense grows out of my biblical sense, and that comes first. And politics or other things that you might describe as conservative clearly is secondary to that. And, you know, on some things I probably am not very conservative on some political questions and so forth, and that's because I try as best I can understand it in my fallen and sinful way. I try to apply the Bible.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. If you've just joined us, we're speaking with Dr. Marvin Alasky about his remarkable religious and political journey.
Let's start to talk about some of the ideas that you've become well known for. This idea of compassionate conservatism. Yeah, it's been hailed as a very influential concept in recent times, but also at times dismissed as a slogan for more right-wing politicians. But so straight from the horse's mouth, can you tell us what do you mean when you use the term compassionate conservatism?
Well, sometimes it has been a slogan for right-wing politicians, but there's a reality behind it. In World Magazine, which I edit every year, we have our readers nominate Christian charitable organizations in their communities that actually change lives. And so our reporters have seen, and I've personally seen, I've visited certainly more in 100 cities or so, poverty-fighting groups, and I've seen the way that when nothing else works, that works. I mean, particularly, for example, among long-term addicts and alcoholics. It's very rare that people come out of that lifestyle unless they do have a belief in God and a belief that they are made in God's image, and thus they should not be defaming that image by their addiction. So that changes lives. I've seen that, so I know it's real. It's not just a slogan.
There's at least two elements to this, right? There's a kind of personal engagement between mm-hmm. the giver and the receiver.
Yes.
That's one. And another is this spiritual element. We might come and talk a bit more about that at the moment. But there's a history to this, isn't there? You say this used to work well in a previous time in your country. That's what you're appealing to, isn't it? The way that it kind of used to work, and then there was a change.
I was able to do a lot of historical research on this at the Library of Congress and other places, and saw going back to American colonial days in the 1600s, and then continuing really through the early 20th century, poverty fighting was essentially a Christian function. And then also, as there were Jewish immigrants in the late 19th century, synagogues also became involved. But Christians and Jews, for the most part, were helping new immigrants come in. They came in very, very poor, but they helped them to get jobs and work hard and buy houses and develop a good life in that way. And then when there were people who were homeless or I guess, you know, here sleeping rough, I mean, they set up in the late 19th century in every large city in America Christian missions. That, again, the goal was not to just give a person who was sleeping rough some food and have him stay there, but to help him change his life. So just give one example. Typically, the Christian homeless shelters had a wood pile next door. And when an able-bodied man came, they were able to say to that person, here's an axe, please chop some wood. And by doing that, this was kind of a work test. Was the person willing to work to help himself and also help others, people who were unable to chop? So, I mean, women would often, they weren't given an axe, but there would be a sewing room where they were encouraged to sew clothes for themselves and their children, and then also for victims of hurricanes or other natural disasters. So right then, people were being shown, you know, you're not just helpless, you're not just a taker, you can also be a giver, you can help yourself, and you can help others. And that was what Christian charity was all about. And in the process of doing that, saying, okay, now you see you're capable of work, you can do these things, and the reason you can do these things is because you're made in God's image. And God actually has a plan and a purpose for your life, and you should not be fighting against him, but should be loving him as he is loving you. This worked, enormously effective. Not that it eliminated all poverty, but it moved people, most people, from poverty into self-sufficiency over a period of several years. And then they were able to help the next group of immigrants or others who were coming along. It continued that way really up until the early 20th century.
I can imagine that your ideas make quite a few people nervous.
Really? You have a vivid
imagination.
Just a guess. Yes.
I mean, in most Western countries, particularly outside of the US, perhaps, you know, a lot of people would see the welfare state as kind of the great achievement mm-hmm. of the modern age. Are you really saying that government welfare is a bad thing?
It is sometimes a good thing for people who are hungry, for people who really need help, often for women who have been abandoned by men and are destitute. For the elderly at times. I mean, so there are a great number of people, many millions of people, in fact, for whom that's a good thing. But it all depends on the values of the individual. And if the individual does not have that sense of purpose, then I think we can apply some of the things that that Paul teaches. For example, he writes at one point that widows, and of course, as we read the Bible, we see how widows and orphans are so near to God's heart. But at one point, he says that even widows, you should help them if they've been industrious, if they've helped their neighbors and so forth. But if they're just gadding about and getting into trouble and not leading good lives, then you should challenge them and not just enable them to stay in the situation. So, I mean, here's what the Bible teaches, basically, that able-bodied people, if a man does not work, he shall not eat. I mean, that's a very direct injunction that I think some people look upon and be horrified. But it's actually who we are. God created us. God made us creative people. Work in the book of Genesis before that unfortunate afternoon in the garden, before the fall, work was a very good thing and remains a good thing. It remains something. It's difficult now. There are thorns. We have to work by the sweat of our brow. But it still is one of the things that in God's grace, makes us human, gives us purpose in life, and allows us to become better than we otherwise would be. So I think from the Bible, you can see that if welfare is just given in a way that's not challenging personal and spiritual, in a way that's just bureaucratic, treating people as numbers or animals, then you're not treating people as human beings made in God's image. You may think you're helping them, but you're actually hurting them. So I'm not at all calling for an end to poverty help, but I'm saying that government often does it very poorly. And from the historical record, these church groups and synagogue groups and other religious groups did it much better and could do it much better if given the opportunity now.
So, Marvin, looking back on your journey from a communist atheist to a Christian at the more conservative end of the scale, it's obvious to me from what you're saying that journey doesn't mean, as some people might expect, that you care less about poverty and about the poor.
I think that's true of Christians in the United States generally. The real reason among conservative Christians there is dislike for the welfare state is not because there's resistance to helping people, it's just it doesn't work. And often it makes things worse for some people rather than better for some people. We had welfare reform in the United States 20 years ago that tried to challenge people to actually work. And people who accepted that challenge, their lives became much better. So I think the argument against the welfare state is not an argument against helping the poor. It's an argument in favor of helping the poor the right way that really does help. And we have two centuries of historical experience showing what works and what doesn't work. And so our hope is that we would rely on that historical experience rather than continuing down this path that may feel good for people who may consider themselves very benevolent, but in practice it's very harmful.
From the Center for Public Christianity, you've been listening to Life and Faith with Natasha Moore and Simon Smart. We've been speaking with Marvin Alasky. If you'd like to hear more of this type of conversation, please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Plus, it helps people to discover our show. All you have to do is type CPX into the search box to find us and hit subscribe. While you're there, why don't you leave us a rating or review?